Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. This will ensure that should the worst ever happen, we'll always be ready. You can believe a statement like that. We've got that story plus, oi, where's your TV license, mate? But first, really, I think the story of the summer. Data center opponents stage 142 protests across 42 U.S. states. Grabbing this from Reuters, opponents of the rapid build-out of data centers held 142 protests across 42 states last Saturday in the first nationwide effort to channel anger at the AI infrastructure expansion that has ramped up over the past year and roiled local politics. The protests, coordinated by Humans First, co-founded by a former leader of the modern-day Tea Party, so maybe they've got a bit of that Ron Paul spirit, hopefully. She compares growing opposition to data centers to the right-wing populist movement that emerged in 2009, all because of Ron Paul, and it was the mutation offshoot of that, to protest what it saw as excessive taxation and government overreach, you know, because Obama was bad then. Protesters rallied. Protesters rallied against what Human First calls the unaccountable build-out of data centers and unacceptable infringement on our liberty in Fredericksburg, Virginia. That's East Virginia. One young man carried a sign reading, "We thrive on water, not data." In Atlanta, a small knot of protesters wielded signs reading, "Georgia never voted for hyperscale AI data centers." Nationwide and city-specific counts of protesters not immediately available, said Chris Barron, president at Right Turn Strategies, who is handling press relations for Humans First. Probably shouldn't have the word right in your title. Attendance was lower than expected in some rural areas and major cities such as Atlanta, talking to, again, Reuters. And I would say, James, to just note of it, it's pretty hot here in the States. And so lots of things. I mean, baseball games have been delayed or postponed, not only because of all the wildfire smoke coming from Canada, but just because of pretty brutal summer weather here. So I imagine that had to play at least some part in it. Also, maybe people just didn't know about it. I'll admit, I didn't know anything about it. I had to learn about it from my friend and colleague in Japan. Humans First praised the efforts, however, of community activists. "We were thrilled with the turnout," Barron said. "Data center opposition is among the few issues uniting Americans across ideological lines, with just a third of Americans approving of the pace of data center construction in the U.S., according to a June Reuters Ipsos poll. 14% of respondents would support a data center being built in their backyard to support artificial intelligence products." And again, this is kind of the part that gets me, James. And here's, we're on the computers talking about the AI data centers to support artificial intelligence products for technology firms such as every freaking thing everybody uses: Meta, Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft, and of course, Elon's XAI. "The data center industry is continuing to work with policymakers, stakeholders, and residents to ensure data centers strengthen, not strain, the areas where they operate, while mitigating any negative impacts to households and businesses," said Josh Levy, president of the Data Center Coalition, the industry's association and a lobbying group. The related question: is China sabotaging America's data centers? And I have a lot of data center coverage actually on my Morning Monarchy this week. That was pretty much on my Cyberspace War Tech Tuesday Morning Monarchy. Trump says he'll fast track private gas plants to power AI data centers. The Gov using eminent domain to seize all kinds of people's properties. Oh, sorry, that's your family home for 200 years, but we're going to take it. And I actually tried to dig into a little bit just to see, are Democrat or Republican states embracing or pushing back against this more or less? And really, maybe most galling in the video, like everything we say and play, will always be included in the show notes so you can continue the research for yourself. In a hearing where town residents grilled officials on data centers, a resident of Tyrone Township, Michigan, asked a simple question: "Have you guys on the city council signed a non-disclosure agreement with any party regarding developments that could affect the town?" First guy said no. Second guy said no. It went real downhill after that as they started to fight with each other. And you can hear they know each other. These are people not from giant metropolises like, "Oh, Jessica, you're not going to lie to me this time?" But I would say the highlight of some of my recent data center pushback coverage: West Virginia man accused of destroying flock cameras goes viral. Tons of comments on, of course, because the police have to make a post about it on their social media page. all the, it went big time. That's not him. He was with me. Oh, that couldn't be the guy. We were doing this thing that was good for the community. I'm Spartacus. No, I'm Spartacus. James, I think this could be what the story of the summer. I would argue it would be the story of the year if, you know, Dingus didn't start World War III for Israel.
All right. Yeah. That whole thing. Yeah. No, you're right. There is definitely something catching on here. And here's the real question, James. Is this an unmitigated good news story? Could it be? Are we seeing something that is unmitigated good news? We are seeing, finally, people rising up, people getting angry, people taking the Spartacus approach. I'm Spartacus. I'm the man who cut down that camera. No, I'm the man. Yes, that's a good thing, right? And still, the spidey sense in the back of my head says something. But before I get into that, I should just say up front, I am, of course, happy that people are concerned, aware, informed, concerned, and taking action. Those are good things, and I will continue to encourage that. So once again, just like last week, I will tell people about Reclaim Our Future, the National Day of Action on AI Data Centers, taking place August 1st. More information, reclaimfuture.com. But having said that, yeah, the real question in my mind is, these automated license plate readers have been around for decades at this point. I mean, we've been talking about technology like that for a very long time. Why is it Flock in particular that is now the central point and focus of all this rage? And why is the AI data center protest? Why is it catching on? Why is it being spread and talked about in the media? And Tea Party member, is that like the original, like Ron Paul Tea Party, or is that the co-opt corrupted GOP run Tea Party of like 2009 and onwards that became the left-right shenanigans? So it really does. I mean, I hate to all do this and question every single good news story that ever presents itself, but I think we have to be aware and realistic that these sorts of things don't just gain traction in the controlled establishment media and get put in front of us in that venue, unless there's a reason behind it. And I think there may be a type of dialectic pincher movement going on that is presented in that, oh my God, it's the Chinese who are secretly funding this data center protest, right? And we're going to need to bring in the whatever, ICE or whoever to deal with it, right, guys? And you will note that the thoroughly risible Kevin O'Leary, who I didn't even know about, I don't watch TV, I'm not plugged into pop culture, I don't know this guy, but I've just seen him because of this data center stuff in the past several months. And his number one thing is, it's China is funding all the opposition to these data centers. Who could possibly be against a data center in Utah except the Chinese, I tell you? Mm-hmm. Well, now that's being amplified. So is there some sort of dialectic being pushed here? Anyway, I don't want to overthink it because, of course, that just plays into the establishment's hands. You can't do anything. Oh, resistance is actually part of supporting the system. So don't do that, guys. No, support the, you know, National Day of Action. Obviously, we should be against the data centers. We should be against the Flock cameras and all of it. But also, let's be wary of what kind of direction the narrative is being steered in here, and whether, you know, we ultimately can set the narrative again. We do not need the establishment media to report on this stuff for us.
James, I've been playing chess a lot the last year or so, trying to teach myself to play chess. And one of the favorite things I do, you can find me as Monarchy on the chess app. There'll be games, and it just throws you into the middle of a game you didn't play to just show, like, what move would you make right now in the middle of this game? And I think that's it. It helps you think ahead, plan ahead, because you've got three moves ahead that you wonder if your opponent, oh man, they goaded me into doing that so they could get me over there. I didn't see it at the time. But yeah, don't use Chinese TikTok. Use American TikTok. Don't use Chicom spy tech. Use our American spy tech. James, just sort of formulating the idea as you were there talking about it. Where did all of this come from? How did this get all as big as it did? One part that just struck me, it didn't have a name. They were called ALPRs. You know, the ALPRs, the automated license plate readers. Okay, that's an okay acronym. But now it's Flock. It's got a brand corporate name that, like some kind of tar baby, can take all the heat, all the hate, all the stuff. We'll smash it. Oh, good. We got rid of all those Flock cameras, which is just a brand name version for New World Order surveillance. So just like they change out presidents, the agenda still rolls on. So that would maybe be a part I would look at as Flock as sort of the, we'll lead the parade and, oh, I took all your slings and arrows so they can bring in the next thing. Well, it's between 600 and 750 days since the event, but that hasn't stopped those of us that survived from enjoying ourselves. Britain to stage its biggest ever war simulation to ensure the whole country is ready. Grabbing this from GBNews.com, Britain is to stage its biggest ever war simulation, terror drills, war games we would call these 20 years ago in 9/11 Truth. Britain is to stage its biggest ever war simulation to ensure the whole country is ready in case of an attack. The aim of the simulation is to prepare the country for war. Alongside the sim will be a public campaign to raise awareness about the importance of protecting the nation. Darren Jones, chief secretary to the outgoing Sir Keir Starmer, said this will ensure that should the worst happen, we will always be ready. Citation needed. In a statement published today, Mr. Jones outlined various government initiatives as part of their commitment to update Parliament with an annual overview of the UK's resilience. Among the initiatives was the simulation, totally planned for next year, you guys. Don't get all excited that the simulation started early. Where the government would simulate a hybrid conflict with a foreign adversary. Involved in the simulation, even though, of course, as we know, the tyranny will come from within, as it always does. Involved in the simulation will be hundreds of officials from across government departments, as well as ministers, named Operation Albiston Shadow. And I ran a search on Albiston, and all I can find is it seems like it's a famous Brit last name. The exercise will test the government's preparedness for attacks against the UK, which will complement NATO's similar exercise with the catchy title of CMX-27. This comes as there are growing concerns of a China-Russian attack on a NATO country as its military regularly breaches the alliance's airspace. Russia's the only one that defies international dictates. Mr. Jones told MPs there would also be a national resilience public awareness campaign. This is where I get more interested in the sort of propaganda media part of it. Its aim, he said, is to help people understand simple measures they can take ahead of potential disruption. I'm sure, you know, hiding under a small wooden desk will probably do all you need. Among the risks cited, of course, a cyber attack capable of knocking out power, water, phone signal, or access to local food shops. I'm sure the data centers and Flock cameras will all be okay. Officials told The Telegraph schools and colleges would also receive new guidance on teaching children, all the children at college, how to stay safe during emergencies. James, keep calm, carry on, and remain indoors.
Exactly right. The event. I was just thinking about that skit a couple days ago, but not in connection to this. But yeah, maybe. This seems like a bread and butter kind of New World Next Week story that we could have been doing at, you know, any point in the past 20 years, right? Like, I did not look this up beforehand, but I'm going to go off the top of my head. It was Jade Helm, right? That was the one about a decade ago that was going to be the FEMA internment camps, and they're going to flip it live, guys, and all that. Remember, we've lived through several of these freakouts, and for good reason, because we do know that there is often an overlap between terror drills and terror events. It's just that they do terror drills 8,000 times a year, and the one that they flip live is the one that, you know, becomes the false flag event. So you can't necessarily say that it's going to flip live or be preparation for something. But at the very least, I think this shows us directionally where the UK government is going. And of course, this is not about, oh my God, what if the Ruskies come? This is always about domestic control and control of the domestic population. So I've already seen the speculation in the UK parts of the independent media that this is really about some sort of domestic insurrection that they're preparing for, and how will they, you know, put the lid on it when time comes. Yeah, fair enough. At least, at the very least, that's something that no doubt the deep staters in the British establishment are thinking about right now. So fair enough. This is all part and parcel of that, and part and parcel of the keeping everyone in mortal fear at all times. They've got a full year to blast all of this indirect propaganda. Hey guys, we're not telling you that, you know, there's going to be horrible things. We're just saying we're getting prepared for horrible things that you might face in the event of whatever happens. So it's, again, people should have their head screwed on straight, know what this is, be aware that these types of things can, of course, be flipped live and operationalized in various ways, but not necessarily. It could just be part of the gradually boiling water that is boiling the frogs. And the point, as always, is to remind people that in the event of any real emergency or genuine crisis, it ain't the government that's going to be there to help. You're not looking to the men in the uniforms with the guns to, oh, please restore order. That's probably not the right way to do it. So, you know, I'm just thinking of this off the top of my head, but we should probably in the reality-based community have, you know, drills and preparation for what if the government does something. And, you know, maybe we can make a fancy title out of that. I guess Albiston's already taken, but we'll find another snooty Snodgrass kind of name.
Have contact information with the people you know, with the people you love, with the people you would definitely want to hook back up with if some catastrophic catalyzing event happens. Their phone number, their address, nothing on the computer at all. I mean, as I've seen the memes lately say, this is only going to end when people start doing things they can't post about on the internet. I also always say media monarchies for entertainment purposes only. I didn't say that. It's, I mean, what, our two stories so far, it is psychological warfare. It's like, wait, are they gonna, they're trying to goad us into moves. So don't be a dummy and try and come out of the corner and do some flying leg kick and you break your knee and then the whole fight's over. But remember, Bush was gonna suspend the election in 2008. I heard old classic 2007 Monarchy that I was playing recently on MediaMonarchy.com/listen. Old articles. Oh, well, we got to worry. I mean, we're just assuming there's going to be a 2008 election. Obama was going to suspend the election in 2012. Again, they rope-a-dope us with all of these things constantly. And I think it has to take into account that they know that we know about war games and flipping terror drills live. So it's like, just bury them in war simulations. Just bury their needle in haystacks and they'll never know really what they're doing. As the popular saying goes, if they can get you asking the wrong questions, it doesn't matter what the answer is. And I will include the link to BBC Comedy. That Mitchell and Webb look, a sketch comedy show that had a recurring sketch about the event. And it was some undescribed apocalyptic event, but they kept on and had a game show, which, of course, I can appreciate. And yeah, James, it's you just said it, domestic control. It's been hitting me lately, as we knew. They tested all of this out in the Middle East. All the weapons, all the sound wave cannons, all the agitprop, all the psych warfare, and hell, if we got a, you know, stacky of naked pyramids, we've tested all that out as well. So I said the Beeb, and that'll take us to our third and final story on This New World Next Week, episode 638. BBC, this is we'll put even more bread on the New World Next Week butter here. BBC loses 500,000 license fee payers in a year of scandals. It's probably because they misspell license. Bad news about the BBC from The Telegraph. The number of people paying the license fee has fallen by more than 500,000 in a year of scandals at the British Broadcasting Corporation. The BBC's annual report shows that 23.3 million TV licenses were bought in the past year, a decrease of 539,000 compared to the previous 12 months. It follows a year in which the BBC was hit by a series of scandals. James, I feel like we covered some of these on New World Next Week. In October, The Telegraph, again, you know, busting on the BBC. You gotta kick them when they're down to get your space in the news sphere. The Telegraph revealed that a speech by DJ Trump had been doctored in a Panorama episode. We definitely covered this. Given the impression that the U.S. president encouraged supporters to storm the Capitol building in 2021, when, of course, it was undercovers like Ray Epps. An internal BBC review. And again, even AJ on the bullhorn, you've seen the videos, like, don't do this. Don't go in. This is a trap. It's a trap. An internal BBC review of the documentary Gaza, How to Survive a War Zone, concluded that it had breached editorial guidelines on accuracy by failing to disclose the information about the position of the child narrator's father in the Hamas-run government. You know, like the incubator baby story. The scandals led to the resignations of Tim Davey as director general and Deborah Turnus as chief executive of BBC News. The fall in license fee payers is the highest annual drop since the COVID pandemic, when numbers fell by 738,000. James, I would think more people would have been watching TV. That's an interesting note to put a pin in. It means the number of people paying is the lowest since 1999. Since the beginning of the decade, the number of license fees in force has fallen by 2.7 million. The BBC report finds that income from the license fee, which stands at £180 per household, remains insufficient to sustain a universal public service. And as I often say, if you don't do enough business to run your business, you might not should be in business. Matt Britton, the BBC's B-R-I-T-T-I-N. The BBC's new director general said the decline had contributed to the financial challenge facing the corporation. However, thanks to the rising cost of the license fee, because everything costs more for less, the BBC collected £388 billion from it in the most recent financial year, representing an increase of £36 million on the previous year. The report also deeds the income of the BBC's highest paid stars. James and I just kind of, I don't know who any of these people are. I, of course, you know, fantasize about being a highly paid $500,000 a year radio DJ. And they rattle off all these dudes' names who I didn't know. And I had to look it up because I was like, what about Zane Lowe? He left BBC One in March 2015 after 12 years with the station to go to Apple in Los Angeles. And as our buddy Ray Vahi, co-creator of BitChute, said, this is how I heard about this story. Half a million Brits just ditched the BBC license fee, biggest drop in years as trust collapses. Yet the government's response? Force feed more BBC trusted content on YouTube and TikTok via algorithm boost to fight misinformation. But people are voting with their wallets. You can't regulate your way back to relevance. James, I think another classic New World Next Week kind of story.
It is, isn't it? And okay, I have British ancestry, but I'm not exactly, I don't have my finger on the pulse of British society. I was there a couple of years ago for the Better Way conference, but I don't claim to know exactly what is going on in the mind of the average Brit. But isn't it interesting? Like, really? These scandals from the past year have resulted in this mass turning away from the BBC? I feel like there must be something else going on here other than what we're being told, because it just doesn't seem, after whatever, everything of the, you know, the past few decades, let alone COVID and all of that crap, if that wasn't enough to get people to stop paying their license fees, what would be? Why? Because of some documentary that no one watched? I don't know. Anyway, it's a good thing. I agree. Again, it's a good thing. It's just, it's something doesn't quite add up to me. But then again, not only do I not have my finger on the pulse of, you know, British society, but also the Brits that I tend to interact with, other than people that I'm directly related to, tend to be people who read the light newspaper or people who go to the Better Way conference or people who are generally clued in and probably not paying their BBC license fee anyway. So maybe I have a self-selected group that I'm judging from. But I'd be interested to hear from people in the UK in the audience if they're seeing this, if they're feeling this, if there really is some sort of actual protest against the BBC going on now, after this, not after Jimmy Savile, not after COVID, not after all that crap. No, after this. I don't know. I'm not questioning it. I'm not questioning it. If it's happening, that's good. I'm just saying it just seems odd to me.
James, you know, I mostly just know, you know, British bands and things. they send me copies of the Light newspaper to write here in El Rito, New Mexico, and a huge thanks to them. James, it really has, like a lot of things, hit me recently. Trump is the cudgel, destroying everything that has been set up. Again, a lot of things maybe need to be destroyed, but it's made people, as we've discussed for the last decade, I hate Trump so much, I'm going to shoot myself in the foot. People losing their mind over all of this one dude. It's all been focused on, you know, like this celebrity star kind of guy. James, in the past, you have, I believe, expressed disbelief in the BBC TV detector vans story, which, again, as far as tech and media go, is pretty fascinating to me. I saw several months back really great half-hour documentary from Ringway Manchester, how TV detector vans know if you have a TV in your house. And that's what connects to this whole BBC TV license boondoggle. It was pretty good, and it has a lot of footage of what appear to be pretty real TV detector vans. I don't know, it convinced me, but I was also convinced by the new 10-7 conspiracy theory video from the guy that brought you the classic 9-11 conspiracy theory, James. I was very excited to see that you published that today. And I will remember and remind folks that we run newworldnextweek.com, and that's where you can support our work. You can't buy charlatans t-shirts there, but you can buy Media Monarchy t-shirts. You can buy Corber Report t-shirts. You can buy some DVDs. But as Cassie and I were talking about this, everything is off the rails expensive. I don't know if you've seen, James, people basically saying, love your work, been a supporter for a long time. I can't afford to do this anymore. I got to put food on the table. Shipping costs, taxes, just to run the New World Next Week store. So here's a good little reminder for your summer. Think of it maybe as summer school. We have downloads of all the Corbett classes on newworldnextweek.com. Doesn't have to pay a postman. Not that postman shouldn't be paid. But it is a direct, easy, quick thing that we don't have to involve international taxes and VAT and all that stuff. I also have 24-hour-long DJ compilations. So both of those, I would say, downloads for folks to hit up on newworldnextweek.com can support our work, but also maybe not support all just the awfulness that is piling up around everyone. On a good note, I play the exclusive audio of these New World Next Week episodes on my Radio Monarchy. That is at MediaMonarchy.com/listen. James, 6:38, man.
Yes, exactly right. And I hope people do look into the downloads at the New World Next Week store. I think people forget they exist sometimes, but you should remember them. But having said that, it is the summer, and I think a lot of people are probably heading off to the beach and other such recreational activities. And good on ya, because you don't need to listen to doom and gloom every single day of your life. So do take some time for rest, relaxation. Speaking of which, the Corbett clan will be doing that. Nothing major, just some minor road trips here in Japan. So we will not be here for New World next week. So we'll be taking next week off. But I believe we might be on in 2 weeks. Maybe James and I will discuss that.
We might discuss that. I do have a birthday that always rolls up around the beginning of August. And I would put forth to folks as well, I would argue that Monarchy Radio is not doom and gloom all the time. I believe I am a world-class 30-plus year radio DJ professional. I can play music like I can cue up news stories. I call it a newsicle. So, James, again, I would remind and just implore folks to go check out the Monarchy Radio at MediaMonarchy.com/listen. Buddy, appreciate you, man.
Awesome. Let's leave it there and talk to you when I talk to you. Happy summer.
All right. Take care.